Blog Talk Radio. Absolutely amazing. Wow. So we've gone down three times already in the first 12 minutes. My mic was muted for the first 4 minutes, missing the whole opening statement here. Not that it was really anything important. So we'll probably go down again. I'm not gonna say that over myself, but okay, so yeah, we played some Kiss for you. I'm gonna have to do the opening statement again. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Blog Talk Radio Rock Blues and News Show. It's Jason D'Amico here. Dealing with the calamities of Skype, dealing with the issues at hand here. Yeah, we got a great show for you. If it doesn't implode on me, we have to be calling in Mr. Tommy Neiman from Surrounding Jericho, a local Christian rock group from Raleigh, North Carolina, Holly Springs, North Carolina, the Triangle area, whatever you want to call it. A lot of these guys are out from Fuquay, Holly Springs. We'll get that figured out in just a second, for sure. So waiting on him to call in here. But yeah, so trying to find this Marshall head. I was talking about this earlier, but the mic wasn't picking anything up. Obviously, because it was muted, but trying to find this JCM 800 100 watt 2203 head. And, yeah, it's very, very difficult. Very difficult. Found a guy out in Greenville. I didn't know this. There's two Greenvilles. There's one in South Carolina and one North Carolina. I didn't realize that until I was talking with one of the guys who was out there and selling the JMP Marshall stack or half stack. And I didn't realize until last night. This guy's 3.5 hours from me. I only thought he was an hour away. But anyway, the hunt goes on. Called Guitar Center in Raleigh. Called Guitar Center in Durham. Called Sam Ash. And Raleigh, sure, called another number amount of stores. The Hollywood, California one, because they were supposedly going to have the 50-watt head there. And we were going to take a look at that. But that did not, it's not going to happen. 100-watt sounds a lot better. We were checking it out. My dad and I were checking out earlier on YouTube and the 100 watt is definitely where it's at. And the 50 watt sounds great, but you can actually turn 100 watt into a 50 watt by taking two of the power tubes out. But things are a little, apologies for things being a little scattered today. Just a lot going on. 347-215-6357 is a guest call-in number. You're listening to Blog Talk Radio, the Rock Blues News Show. It's Jason Miko here. And as I've said, we're going to have this extensive interview just waiting for Tommy to call in. And yeah, so let's play something. I'm going to text him real quick, see if we can get this thing going. It's a cool Police tune. I played this before. I'm going to play it again. It's, really, really interesting rhythmic quality and structure here. It kind of changes on the eighth count. Not the eighth count, but on the eighth note subdivision. It changes over. Very interesting track, to say the least. Off of, I was going to say Regatta the Blanc, but it's not off of Regatta the Blanc. It's off of Atlantis de Amor, the first CD. Not first, first album from the Police. And without further ado, really, really cool track, Police Hole in My Life. It was a Rock Blues Show. the Rock Blues News Show. Jason D'Amico here on Blog Talk Radio, folks. Stay tuned for the exclusive in-depth interview with Tommy Neiman of Surrounding Jericho, and we're going to play hopefully the whole EP. I've got all the files loaded up here. Let's see if we can get this guy over here, get this thing happening.
Yeah.
Hole of My Life by the Police, and off of the album back in 78, 79, 78. Atlantis Day of More. Great, great album. It's got a lot of punk, a lot of whatever you want to call the Police, because it's beyond punk. It's like this amalgamation of punk, pop, rock, a lot of reggae influence, as you could hear there. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce a very long-awaited guest to be on the program here on The Rock Blues News Show. Jason D'Amico here, Block Talk Radio. We probably won't have time to get to your calls, but if we do later on, try calling in later, 347-215-6357's guest call-in number. Our prayer for the music we play is that it is not merely entertainment. We hope that God breathes on this record and that the words to every song works in your life, so that you can pursue righteousness in his name. Every song is intended to equip, convict, and encourage, quote-unquote, from the Surrounding Jericho Facebook page. We have the frontman of this band live in about a couple of seconds here. Tommy Neiman was born in Novato, California. I think that's how you pronounce it. We'll get that right in a second. 20 months prior to the birth of his younger brother, Andrew, in the same exact room of the same exact hospital. Tommy's been playing guitar for 11 years and has been singing his entire life. He became a Christian at the age of 15 and not too long after felt the call to worship leadership. He now resides in Clayton, North Carolina. So it is Clayton. And is the worship pastor of Quest Fellowship Church in Garner, North Carolina. Tommy's a big fan of peach rings and cheer wine. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Tommy Neiman, you're on the program. How are we feeling today, man?
Feeling good. How are you doing today, Jason?
Good, good. Glad to have you here, as I said earlier on the call screen. So a little bit of a introduction there. Just kind of took some bits and pieces off of the website and off of the Facebook page. We're here to celebrate not only the gospel, which is year-round, which is just a beautiful thing. Not just on Easter, but that's the first thing. The second thing is obviously your guys' new EP titled The Flow. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Awesome. Awesome. So we have five tracks here. We're going to try and get to all of them. Let's just start from the beginning, man. So you got saved when you were 15. You obviously have been playing guitar longer than that. How did this all start, man? How did the guitar get in your hands? We'll just start kind of from the beginning with you, and then we'll incorporate the band in a little bit. How did it all start?
So music has always been a big part of my life. Both my parents are talented musically. My dad was a drummer when he was in high school. He was in bands with friends and stuff like that. And his dad was a very talented jazz musician as well, as a lieutenant colonel in the Army. And so that's kind of where my dad's influence came from, and he passed that down to me. He started my brother and I off early listening to stuff like Led Zeppelin and Stevie Ray Vaughan. My dad turned me on to Stevie Ray Vaughan big time when I was younger. And, you know, just all kinds of classic bands that I'm sure you've listened to, Jason, Pink Floyd, AC/DC,
right.
You know, classics. And Pat Metheny is a jazz guitarist, jazz fusion guitarist, who was the first artist I saw perform live, like the first famous artist, first concert I ever went to. And
right.
So when I started off actually taking piano lessons in first grade, but my mom took me out when she saw that I was teaching myself play better than the teacher was teaching me how to play. And so, yeah, and so she took me on that, and so I started taking violin lessons instead. And same thing kind of happened, but I really couldn't. I didn't want to leave violin. I was in the school orchestra, so I didn't really have the opportunity to leave because it was just school. So it was kind of a class, you know. Stayed playing violin up until eighth grade, but then somewhere along the lines, I think it was in like fifth or sixth grade, I picked up the guitar. But what was going on was my brother was learning how to play guitar. And whenever he wasn't home, I'd go into his room and play his guitar, and he was taking guitar lessons and everything, and he got really pissed off when he saw that I was picking up guitar faster than he was, and I wasn't even taking lessons. So he put the guitar down and just focused on drums.
You know what's nuts about that is you
what?
Just basically told
hello?
The same story that Stevie Jimmy Vaughn and the Van Halen brothers.
Yeah, Alex and Eddie. Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, that's amazing,
and
man.
You're breaking up really bad, Justin, or Jason.
Oh, you hear me?
I can hear you now, but earlier, the last bit of what I heard was about the Van Halen brothers.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, hopefully you can hear me now. You just basically told the exact same story of Stevie and Jimmy Vaughn.
Jimmy.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And the Van Halen brothers, because that's essentially what happened. That's amazing to me.
That's hilarious.
So he started playing drums, and then what?
Well, he's been playing drums for a long time, but he also tried to pick up guitar, and when he thought he wasn't going anywhere with that, he stuck to drums. And then, you know, we've played together all our lives, but we've never really performed together, you know what I mean?
Right.
Until we got to around high school, and we performed a little bit here and there, and then I didn't start singing in a performance setting until I was a senior in high school. I started doing the vocal ensemble, and the teacher there, she really helped me break out of my shell. And I was president of the guitar club my junior year of high school, and that helped me break out of that shell, you know, playing guitar live and getting a little better with my stage presence and the performance aspect of music. And like you said earlier, I was 15 when I became a Christian, when I started following Jesus. I'll say that I was 15 when I became a Christian, but I didn't start following Jesus until I was in college. That's a totally different story, though. And if you'd like, we can get to that later. But the whole music
Sure.
aspect, when I became a Christian in high school, it was interesting. They plugged me into the worship team immediately, and I wasn't really a worship guitarist at that point. I was still stuck with, I mean, not necessarily stuck, but I was really just interested in playing bluesy kind of Stevie Ray Vaughan stuff. And so I kind of brought a bluesy kind of flavor to the worship team at that time, which was, you know, interesting, but, you know, unfortunately not what people like to hear in a that sort of atmosphere. So through the means of becoming friends with other guitarists, I learned more about, you know, effects pedals and what a good amp is and what a good guitar is for worship music. And now here I am leading worship full time at Cleft Fellowship, 23 years old. But, you know, I've got three guitars to choose from, you know, two Telecasters and a Strat, and then I play out of a Jet City amp head with through an Egnator cab. It's not huge, but it does exactly what I need it to. But God has
brought
me a long way.
Well, that's great, man. Yeah, I in the first part of the segment earlier, I was talking about, just to the listening audience, I'm trying to hunt down this JCM 800, and it's just being a real laborious chore trying to find one of these things. You know, so it never ends, you know, the whole tone thing never ends. Cause the Stevie Ray Vaughan thing I actually never knew you were, you know, as friends and everything. I never knew that you were inspired by him. Cause he's my biggest inspiration and probably always will be. I've kind of gotten out of that. It was a good 2 or 3 years of really, 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 you know, like learning every song, every note, literally. And just now it's, you know, even now I went down lighter in string gauge. I'm playing with, I was talking with Kyle Bartrip about this when I picked up the cabinet from him, and he was cracking up because he's like, what is the world coming to? You know, I said, I don't know, man. It's just, you know, it's time for a change. But I mean, in all honesty, his playing will teach you so much. even the vibrato alone, and just the way that he can make it sing, and it's just incredible. The amount of sustain he gets out of a Strat, it's like almost a Les Paul. Nonetheless, let's get to one of these tracks. The first, I have the, where is this? I had this. There we go. Does it start out with Take Heart, the EP?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll just start it from the top.
Sounds good to me.
Any before we get going here, we'll get into some of the more technical aspects. You want to talk about kind of the writing process for this song? Any remember when it was, where it was, kind of how long it took?
Yeah. Actually, it's kind of funny. I've always, you know, as I've been playing with the band, or really playing, performing more as a worship musician on worship teams and stuff like that, anytime I'd go to check tone, I would have a riff that I would check my tone with. And around that time, it was the riff to Take Heart. So
right.
I just, you know, check out. We were going to actually have a songwriting session, or maybe we were rehearsing or something. And I started playing that riff just to check my tone, just that very intro riff and nothing else. And Matt and this other guy, you know, Matt Granger, and this other guy who was in the band at the time, since Ben Finch, heard that, and they really, you know, they liked the riff. And so we tried writing something to it. And so the song came from me, Ben, and Matt just down and working out some lyrics, going through scripture and seeing what we could do to put some lyrics to this riff.
Yeah. I got to tell you, man, I've seen you guys live at least two times, maybe three or four. And I think you really did a great job over there, Eric Myers, capturing your guys' sound and energy. It feels like it does live.
Oh, well, thanks, man.
Which hopefully was the intent. I would think it would be. But, know, that's my whole take on this. So without further ado, we'll get this track going. Surrounding Jericho, folks, Take Heart, the beginning of the Flow EP. Blog Talk Radio, the Rock Blues and News Show, here with Tommy Neiman from Surrounding Jericho. That was the first track, Take Heart, off of their new EP, soon to be released to the public, if not already kind of released to the public, as of today, as you are hearing this, viewers. So, Tommy, what's it like being a tenor, man?
What's it like being a tenor? It's interesting. I mean, it's weird being a tenor and a worship leader because it's kind of hard to sing for either A, the congregation to sing with me, or me to sing with the congregation.
Right.
It's just always been, it's always been a challenge of mine because I have to fight a lot of pride and wanting to sound good. If I want to, like, keys of the songs lower, I'll have to sing lower. And me being a musician, you know, we're always really, we want to sound as good as we can and all that stuff.
Yep.
And so that's just a sacrifice I sometimes have to make. But unfortunately, I don't always make that sacrifice. And it's honestly not much of a sacrifice when we think of what real sacrifice is, you know?
Right.
So,
and you know what's nuts, man, is I'll be singing in church, you know, and worship, wherever I'm at, and whether I'm on stage doing backups or just, you know, in the congregation, and we'll have somebody like yourself, screaming tenor, beautiful high-end range, full belting and all that, and I'm down doing I can actually do the two octaves below sometimes, depending on how my voice is. It's really, I play games with myself, and the Holy Ghost enjoys it, so. But, you know, it's just, to me, it's always like, it's just amazing how different everybody's voice is, you know, from one, even day to day and everything. You said you started singing back, in high school, right? You said that choir.
Well, that's when I started performing, but I've been singing
okay.
all my life.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, it'd be pretty amazing if it just started happening a few years back. It sounds like a very well-developed voice, man. I've always told you, I love your voice. I think that song's a solid hit in the Christian charts. You know, that's just my opinion. Let's see what happens. But I really, really believe that song is going to touch a lot of people for sure.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, man. Want to talk a little bit more about the technical aspect of that. Down there with Eric Myers.
Hello. You're cutting out, Jason.
Was this the pre-production and production for this, I think.
Hey, I'm sorry.
Can you
repeat what you were saying? You were cutting out just a second ago.
I'm sure I was, man, because it's Skype and it's a pain. But
I know.
Eric Myers, just wanted the pre-production and production, when did that start? Was that last year?
Oh yeah, it's been a long time coming.
Yeah. So, what song we can start with? Take Heart. Is there anything really interesting for a musician listener out there that, you know, that isn't on any other track, or just the way you guys track that thing?
Is there anything different that we did? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
You got out again.
Yeah. Apologies for that.
It's okay. What exactly was it you said? I'm sorry.
Yeah, just the recording process on that song. How was it? And did you guys do anything different than usual?
Than usual, yeah, for sure. It was quite interesting the way Eric had us do it, and I'm sure it's a lot of stuff that no one else is unfamiliar with. But us being who we were, I've only been to one other recording studio or two other recording studios, and. I'd never done it this way. So the way that Eric had us record, even the guitars alone, was quite interesting. I'll start with that. He started, you know, the way normal, I don't know if this is normal a lot, but he had to start with drums. And then along with the drums, we'd record scratch guitar and scratch bass so that the drummer knew where he was going and stuff like that. And,
right.
And then we got to guitar next. We recorded guitar, and that was super fun. Matt loved recording guitar because what we did was take multiple different guitars and like two or three different amps and just layered that one riff that you hear throughout Take Heart, that one. He recorded, like, he used four different guitars, a Les Paul, a Telecaster, he used a Fender, or a Gibson, oh gosh, what was that guitar? It was this crazy Gibson something or other that had, it was a beautiful guitar, and it had such, even the wood that the guitar was made out of created this beautiful sustain, and it was just huge sounding. That guitar alone would have really done something well with the Take Heart riff, but we decided to, you know, use different guitars and then EQ the amp differently just to make it sound more full and more and
right.
huge, essentially. It's a practice used by the Foo Fighters whenever they record a guitar sound. They'll stack that guitar so that it can just sound enormous. And then
right.
Bass, we just had one bass track throughout the whole time, but this is kind of interesting. We used a 12-string bass on a few of the songs.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah,
it's kind of like Pearl Jam, the 10 album.
Yeah, I guess if they used a 12-string bass, I'd never seen one before. It looked like if Frankenstein were a guitar, it would have looked like this.
Yeah, take a listen to Jeremy off of the 10 album, and there's a couple other songs on. I think Jeremy for sure, and Black, a couple of those tracks on the Pearl Jam 10 album. They have the 12-string bass.
I'll need that.
Yeah, very interesting. I didn't. I'll have to listen. I didn't even notice it. That'll creep up on you, that thing.
I'll tell you, like, the parts that you'll hear it on, like, the breakdown about halfway through the song. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
There's a breakdown in there. There's two notes. Goes, dun, dun, dun. Kyle's using a 12-string bass in there, and he's hitting only E because the beginning of the breakdown is just E. And so,
right.
But it's like three different octaves. So it's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll definitely be taking a look at that after this and check that out for sure. That's incredible. Yeah, so you guys are obviously running. So Foo Fighters kind of background here. You know, I think you guys sound. Does anybody have a U2 influence? Because sometimes the band sounds a little bit like U2, and I hate throwing that stuff. You know, you guys sound like Surrounding Jericho. Period. But
no,
there seems to be that kind of that U2 influence. I don't know if anybody. Obviously, you know, it's like they have that. That joke about, you know, like the Edge is basically every worship leader's guitar sound. You know, there's always that that connotation, but it's just kind of funny to me.
No, that's actually what I was going to say. There probably is because, you know, the Edge is like the guy that essentially the founder of the Dotted Eighth Delay. So
right.
I guess every worship guitarist has that element of U2 to their guitar sound.
Yeah.
So I could understand that.
Yeah, that's you know, it definitely, like I said, it definitely sounds like you guys live, just a real wall of sound, and I don't mean, because a wall can be a bad thing. It's definitely not a bad thing the way that you guys have executed this. It just sounds like you guys live, and it's just great. I'm really excited about this EP. That's the reason why I wanted to have you on here. So when can the public expect to see this in cover? Do you guys have it already? You guys selling it at shows? What's going on?
We're going to start pre-sales here soon, but they might not be looking around mid to late May.
Okay. Cool. I think my second album's coming out around that. It'll be funny if it comes out around the same time. Let's see here. I had a couple of, well, we'll get to some of the more personal questions in a little bit. Let's get to another track. We have Stand Up, I believe, is the next one. Anything unique here that you'd like to discuss?
I think Kyle also used the 12-string bass on this one, maybe in a few spots. But if there are people listening to this, pay attention to the solo that Matt has. And you'll hear an octave, like, it's very unique when it comes to solos. You don't really hear this a whole lot, but in there, we use this OD20, a Boss OD20, which is an overdrive pedal. And there's an octave, there's an octave generator built into that pedal, and he used that on the solo in this next song, and it made it sound so cool.
Is he putting an octave above or an octave below?
Below, octave below.
Okay,
and
so
it's
he's doing yeah, it's like a Satriani thing.
Maybe, and it's I would say that, but it's not throughout the entire solo, just one part, and it's just
okay.
You'll hear it and you're just like, oh, that sounds so good.
That's cool. You know, it's funny because I'm actually the exact opposite. What I like, I mean, I love writing riffs with the low end, octave note. I love doing I think Hendrix did it with the octave above. That's my favorite. I love that. But I'm going to take a listen. This is really, I'm looking forward to hearing this. Surrounding Jericho, Stand Up off of the Flow EP. Tommy Neiman here. Joining us, obviously, in-depth interview with Radio Rock Blues News Show. Stand Up. exceptional. Really, I mean, dude, like I said, it's just, I had to have you on here because this EP is just really, really enjoying this EP here. Blog Talk Radio, Tommy Neiman's on live. So I did hear that 12 or the octave difference there. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's cool. Really, really cool.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Yeah, anything unique about the writing process there for that song, or kind of the same thing? Everybody's sitting in the room, somebody's got a riff, and then, you know, let's get the Bible out, let's see what the Lord wants to put on through this and that type of deal, or?
Actually, this one started out with Matt. Matt's always been kind of a technical guitarist when it comes to writing, and he's always been he's a really talented dude. Matt Granger, he's also a worship leader. He started writing this one with the riff, and it actually was about a third slower than what it is now, if you can believe that. It didn't sound right. Like, he showed me one day, it was about 6 months after the song had been written, he showed me this video that he had recorded of the riff so that he wouldn't forget it. I was listening to it, and I was like, that does not sound right. That's not how it should have been. He's like, yeah, I know. So he had a verse written, I believe, and we sat down together and just kind of edited it a little bit, and then added a verse or two more, and then a chorus, and that's how it happened. There's really not a lot to that song. Hold on, hey Jason, hold on 1 second. I can't hear you at all.
Get into the nitty gritty here.
Hello? Jason. Jason.
Yeah.
There you
are. Wow. Hold on. I got an echo here. Man. Oh my God. Give me call back. Hold on.
Call back.
Do you hear me now?
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay, dude, that was crazy. I had so I ditched Skype and I just went on Blog Talk Radio's. The quality's not as good on here, but it shouldn't cut out. I guess we're still on. That was a miracle that the whole thing didn't go down again. Anyway, what I was gonna bring up a couple of questions here. All right, so coming to Christ and everything, you talked about later on in college, really getting in deep with the Lord, as far as really, you know, the whole disciple nature of things. Any testimony you'd like to share, especially for just, you know, what was going on there?
Well, that's when, like I said earlier, that's when I started following Jesus, I suppose I could say. Because I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't know what the Lord was doing. Not to say that since then I've been just completely perfect, because no one is completely perfect. I've screwed up since then. I've, you know, tried doing things my own way, but I've always come back to Christ, and I've just always, you know, realize that no one's going to follow Jesus perfectly, and especially
right.
me, I'm not going to at all. But I didn't really get a good understanding of what the Bible is supposed to be for us until college. I didn't really have a great understanding of really who Jesus is, and who I'm supposed to be in Him as a follower of Christ. I'm supposed to live sent. If that makes any sense, before Jesus
Absolutely.
Left Earth, he gave us, you know, a final command that was to go, essentially to go. And so I didn't
yep.
I wasn't a big Bible reader until I got to college. Not saying that I didn't read my Bible, but I didn't really know what I was reading. I was just taking it at face value. But there's much more to it than that. There's a lot more to dig deeper into. There's a lot of stuff to know about that time of this, like that period, you know, when the Bible was written or when each book was written. There's more things to understand than just what we read, because so often we'll read parts of scripture and apply it to our life blindly without seeing what it meant to the people back then. And so we just, it's just something that I was learning. I only went to school for like a year, but I think God had me there for that, you know, that amount of time just so that I could learn how to read the Bible.
Hey, it's amazing. I grew up reading the NIV, and we have, I think my mom has her American Standard, and my dad's an NIV guy. And recently I've been doing a lot of diving into just learning about the enemy, learning about the occult, learning about all, you know, just the kingdom of darkness, and really, you know, how that ties in with the Bible. And, I mean, it's just a lot of this stuff is very, very, very true in this day and age, you know, and what I really believe to be the end times, they're here. Obviously, you know, we're at the end age. So, but it's interesting because there's a lot of translation differences between the King James, the original English translation, and some of these other versions. And I never knew that until about a couple of months ago, really. And I've been diving into the King James, and it's amazing the differences. And, you know, so I guess that I'm just kind of adding on to that. But I noticed that a couple of months ago. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I'm more of a, I've always read the ESV, the English Standard, because it's more of a, like something I've read the KJV and the New King James. I'm a huge fan of those. I'm not a big fan of the Message. There are tons of like different transliterations out there, which isn't essentially a translation, but a transliteration is like the taking of one version of scripture and writing in a completely different way, which is what the Message is. The ESV is an essentially literal translation, and it tries to capture the precise wording of the original text and the personal style of each Bible writer. So that's kind of what the ESV goes for, and that's why I found myself reading that whenever I dive into scripture.
I'll check it out for sure. The ESV, you know, what's great is you have your little Bible app on your iPhone, and you change the translation right there, or the version. It's amazing. You know, you can just do that. I'll check that out. I'll definitely try the ESV out. That's interesting. So you're doing that in college. You're reading, and now you're leading worship. How did that happen? Just a calling and just looking for it, or did it just come to you?
Great that you asked that. When I was going to college, I was going for music because I wanted to be a worship leader. And I only went for a year, so I don't have a degree. But I'm doing what I was going to college for anyway, and I'm doing it full-time. And I can't credit that to anyone but the Lord, because he has just opened so many doors for me that I'm just not deserving of whatsoever. Like, so I started leading worship in youth group when I was around 16 or 17. I was a new Christian at that point. I really didn't know what it meant to be a worship leader. For all I knew, I was performing, and I was just trying to look good for all the girls in the youth group. And so that's kind of where I was at that point. And then when I started going to Southeastern, and other people came into my life. There's a couple mentors, Aaron Leeds and David Calvert. They've been poured into my life and just, you know, taught me what it meant to be a worship leader. Another guy who is a local worship leader, but also a national artist, his name is Matt Papa. He has also been a big influence on me when it comes to being a musician and a worship leader, along with a man named Rich Mullins, who died in 1997. But he's famous for writing hits such as, you know, Awesome God and other famous Christian staples that aren't exactly you know, popular anymore, but and in churches nowadays. But the way that Rich Mullins lived his life was just something that I strive to do a lot, and I just fail every day. This man didn't know how much money he made at the end of his career. He lived on a Navajo reservation, and every year when he would, you know, at the end of the year, every paycheck that he got for every performance that he made was sent to his church. His church then, you know, used the money in the way he trusted their stewardship, and then he would get the lowest paid salary in America. Like, the church would send him a salary, and this salary was the average, or not the average, but the lowest paid salary that anyone in America would make, and he would live off of that. He lived in a shack on a Navajo reservation, and this was a Christian musician who was writing hits and was, you know, performing with people like Jamie Grant and Michael W. Smith and all this, but at the same time, he didn't sell out like all of these other artists did. He stayed true to a unique message, and that was identifying with the people that Jesus came to reach the most, and that was the unlovable, that was the homeless and the poor. And so Rich Mullins would sometimes, you know, walk on stage barefoot, and his skin looked like leather because he was out in the sun all day. Yeah, he wouldn't shave. He would confess sin while he was on stage in front of large crowds. This man was incredible. You could tell he lived sent. He lived in a way that honored Christ, and I would love to live like that someday if I could just lay down my pride. Anyway, that was a big influence on me, and I don't remember the original question.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm trying to, no, very, very interesting.
Oh, no, I do. I remember. We were talking about, anyway, so around college, I've been listening to Rich Mullins all my life. My mom was a big Rich Mullins fan. And so, when I was 19, I started leading worship at a Methodist church in Andrew United Methodist Church, under the pastor, Dwayne Parton, who was also a big mentor of mine. And I led worship there for about a year, and then went back to Macedonia Baptist Church, where I was kind of more or less interning under the worship leader there. He was just kind of pouring into me and mentoring me a little bit. But I felt called elsewhere, but I left Macedonia to go to XRC. It's Crossroads Church in Clayton, which is an Assemblies of God church here in Clayton. And I co-led worship there with the worship leader there, and stayed there for about 5 months. And I moved in with this family. I can't remember how long I was at XRC. I moved in with this family that was going to that church because I was living really far away and working I was living in Fuquay, going to church in Clayton, but I was also in Clayton a lot. So they said, hey, why don't you just come and move in with our family? You can occupy a room that we are not doing anything with. You can live here for free, and you can save money and all this stuff. So it was a really cool thing. My roommate at the time, I was living in a house with a guy named Steven, and he moved to Chicago to plant a church. So I couldn't afford to live there on my own, so I moved in with the Feldhouses. And through the Feldhouses, I met this couple, Kirk and Kate Hatch, who were attending Quest Fellowship Church. They came over to the house one time, and then Kate Feldhaus, the mom of the family that I was living with, she would always have me sing songs for the people that come over to her house. And so she had me sing a song for them, song or two for them, and they were like, hey, we're looking for a new worship leader at our church. And I was like, cool. And they were like, you should audition. And I was like, okay. So I auditioned like the next week with the pastor and the elders, and then he called me back and he said, hey, I want you to lead worship at our church with this other guy who is now one of my best friends. And then eventually they took me on every Sunday. Like, but when it was just me and TJ, I would lead worship 3 Sundays, and then TJ would lead worship 3 Sundays, and it just went like that for like 3 or 4 months. But in the entire time, we knew in the back of our heads that one of us was going to get let go. We just didn't know who. And it came time, Paul sat me down and talked to me. He was like, hey, he sat me down in what is now my office, and he was like, so what do you think? And I was like, what do I think? What? Like, your office. And he told me that he was going to hire me on as full-time worship pastor. And I was like, that's incredible. And then I was like, what about DJ? And he had to let TJ go. And but TJ and I remained close friends, thank God. because he's a great guy, and I love him with all my heart because he's just a great friend. He's married now. He's actually a campus pastor for the BCM over across the street from NC State. So he's doing really well. And since then, when Paul sat me down and told me that they were going to take me on every Sunday, I still wasn't full-time, but I was the worship leader. Around August last year, that's when they made me full-time, and that was about – I've been at Quest for about 2.5 years now.
That's what a blessing, man.
Yeah, I remember what the question was. How did I get into it? I had no control over it. Everything that happened was a result of God just opening doors and just saying, hey, I'm going to take you here. And if you make a difference over here and stuff like that. And it's just been like, okay, I'll do whatever you want me to do.
Yeah, that's it's great, man. You know, it's funny because for me, I'll just hit on this for a second, and then we're going to get back to the EP. But it's the exact opposite with me. I'm telling you, man, I've played in church and whatnot, and I've always wanted to be involved in playing in church, and it's so weird how the Lord's just like, well, I want you playing in bars right now. And it's just the strangest thing because it's like all these years I've always wanted to be playing in church, but it's just, as you said, it's like this effortless thing where it just happens. It's just the way that it is. And it's like it's just a unique way that the body works, the body of Christ. And it's just really cool to see somebody like yourself who's obviously doing the worship leading thing, but is also doing the surrounding Jericho work, going into the community, playing the shows, going to the music halls and everything. It's really great, man. We're going to move on. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say, I mean, if anyone were to talk down to you about playing in bars as a Christian, just think for yourself for a second and just say, if Jesus were alive on the earth today, this is my personal opinion. I honestly think one of the last places that Jesus would go would be our local churches. I think he would go to the bars, and I think he'd go to the orphanages and other places like that. I honestly don't think he'd want to be around religious people, because if you think about it, the religious people of his day were the ones that he was the hardest on.
I agree. And thanks for the encouragement. It seemed like the door just closes every time I try to get involved with a church. Or, I mean, I'm there to help. I tell, you know, I'm up involved with a church in New York, and I travel half the time. I'm in New York half the time, you know, playing with New Blue, my band and everything. And it's just one of those, it's just the way it's just playing out right now, where there's all these shows and everything. And it's kind of this peripatetic lifestyle, you know, just moving, you know, walking around, playing around and everything. And it's, thanks for the encouragement, man. I really appreciate that. We're going to go to Beauty and Terrors next. So anything you want to talk about real quick? We're going to try and play all five of these. It says we're going to be streaming for 15 minutes. It'll record. We can go a little bit beyond that. It'll keep recording, and it won't cut us out. But for those of you listening in, streaming, come back later. You have the link down below, Blog Talk Radio, Rock Blues News Show, Jason D'Amico here. For those of you who are tuning in now, this is the extensive interview with Tommy Neiman from Surrounding Jericho, out of Clayton, North Carolina, Triangle area of North Carolina, Christian rock group. And we're going to take a listen to Beauty and Terror. Anything quick that you want to throw in here about this track?
This song came from a struggle in life. A lot of my songs come from just personal internal struggles that I've dealt with, and just you know, being a guy. That's as much I'm going to say about that one. So
hey,
that's kind of what this comes from.
Amen. You got it, man. All right, so we'll take a listen to this, and we'll be right back here on the Rock Blues News Show.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta tell you, man, I can't wait until these music videos are starting to come out. I see it. I'm very visual with music, you know. It's that song especially. Oh man, it's very powerful music, man. Incredible writing. You know, it's for me, just kind of a lot of the songs that I write, whether they're Christ inspired or not, I think you'll agree with me that there's a channeling that occurs. You can be channeled to the wrong thing, obviously. I think a lot of people are, but there's just some of those songs, man, where they almost write themselves. Have you ever had that experience with, is there maybe one of those on the EP?
Yeah, it's funny that you brought this up now, because that was this song. I literally wrote this song about 15 minutes.
I had a hunch. I had a kind of a Holy Ghost download on that. Dude, you got to do a music video on that song at some point. That song is just killer. Wow.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for being on the show. We'll probably run out of time, but whatever. I'm just really enjoying this. We have, we got a couple more here. Let's just go to the next one, and then we'll kind of hopefully it doesn't kick us out. But if it does, it's been real here with Tommy Neiman from Surrounding Jericho. Real quick, I mean, just any last word for the youth? I mean, we have two more songs that we're going to play here, Victory and The Flow, off of The Flow EP. We've talked about the recording process. We've talked about some of your background. We've talked about the band, essentially, the origination of the band somewhat. Kind of had a question here for your message for the youth of America, specifically the United States, America, United States. The world is obviously, there's going to be different cultures and whatnot, but for those of us who are listening in English here, speaking even beyond politically and beyond governmentally and all these other factions that we could talk about, you know, let's just talk in this sense. I mean, what's your take on where we are today in the United States? What's your message for the youth, even beyond the music, as much as the music will reach? What is your heart's desire for the youth of America?
To escape entitlement and learn that America is not the only country in the world. To make yourself aware of what's going on out there with, as opposed to our little Western bubble.
Let's, right.
Make ourselves aware of the, you know, worldwide poverty and, you know, it's typical stuff, but it's not that typical when you think about it. There are people going through lots of things that don't live in the United States. That's why, I mean, and this is just something that, you know, I'm passionate about. We should make ourselves aware of things that are going on other than what's going on in the United States. And that you can take that however you want. That's a very broad statement. I understand that. But
right.
It's how selfish are we to just country, our America, we are not the only place in the world. And, man, I am going to tell you right here, I am the least patriotic American that you will ever meet, and I'm sure there are going to be people who hear this or really hear me say that and probably don't agree with me, but I'm not too proud of America. I'm not too proud of a lot of things that happen here, a lot of the things that we choose to ignore. We are very ignorant in a lot of circumstances, and when it comes to, you know, choosing to just focus on ourselves and just focus on what goes on in our country, I wish we could all just, you know, live together. And there's a lot more to talk about than what I'm saying now, but and I'm going to probably sound like a huge hippie, but I wish we could all just get along, you know, and just let peace
in the
reign.
The square city, right? Hey, it's going to be eternity, man. I'm looking forward to that. It's the world is a fallen place, as we all know very, very well.
Yeah.
Internally and externally. Do you along the lines of that, do you guys see going abroad anytime soon with the band?
That would be cool. Probably not anytime soon. We're all pretty busy when it comes to life. Matt,
right.
He's about to get married. We all have full-time jobs. Except for Kyle, but I think Kyle should be getting engaged and stuff here soon. But we're all pretty busy. I've got, you know, full-time worship pastor, dating an awesome girl. She just walked up to me right now. I don't know. Life is just busy for us all individually. If God has plans for us to go abroad as a band, so be it. If he doesn't, so be it.
Right. Well, great, man. Cool. Well, we'll definitely be keeping you in our intercessory prayers and whatnot. Let's cover this ground real quick. More marketing side of things. You guys can find any of Surrounding Jericho's information on their website, surroundingjerichoband.com. Surrounding Jericho, the Facebook page. Band page, and then surroundingjerichoband.bigcartel.com. I'm going to put those down in the box below for those of you who are listening in. Yeah, I mean, I was just checking out the website, and Big Cartel, you know, if you guys want any merchandise, Big Cartel is still the place to go, right?
Yeah, it will be. I think there's
okay.
A little bit of merchandise on there now, but we'll also be getting t-shirts here soon. And also, we have a Twitter and an Instagram. And we all have individual Twitters and Instagram. You can find me on either one, just at Tommy Neiman.
So you heard it from the man himself, folks, at Tommy Neiman on Twitter. What's your what's the Twitter and Instagram for the band?
At SJ, at S, hold on a second. It's the Instagram is, oh, dude.
I can grab it. We'll put it on the box below if you can't come up with it real quick.
Sounds good.
You know what the Twitter is, or?
Oh, the Twitter is at @SJericho. @S_Jericho.
Okay, great.
And the Instagram, I believe, is at @SJband. @SJ_band.
Okay. I'll throw that in the box below. We have what it's saying, a minute left. I mean, we can, you'll probably, it won't cut you out, but for those of you who are still listening in, if we do go down, whatever, this is Blog Talk Radio. It's been an absolute pleasure here with Tommy Neiman from Surrounding Jericho. It's great to have you on, man.
It's great to be here, man. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
Oh, thanks for coming on and doing the same for me. It's just been a real pleasure, and we'll see what happens. We're going to go ahead and play Victory for you real quick. We'll come back if we're still on. Once again, this is the Flow EP. You've been listening to the Rock Blues and News Show extended episode here on Block Talk Radio. We'll be back if it doesn't cut us off. This is the Victory.